Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim Garrity of National Review is back with us today after a vacation, as well as the National Review cruise. Jim, the last time you were with us was Election Day, November 8th. Not much news since then, right? Pretty quiet?
No, and the most important thing is everything folded out exactly as we expected on election. No, it's a lot has changed. I got on the National Review cruise. I heard from quite a few cruisers who enjoy this podcast. So thanks to everyone for the kind words. Greg, it was a very strange. I woke up and said, I listen to the Three Martini Lunch podcast almost every day. Man, Greg is terrific. He really knows his stuff. And you're okay too, Jim.
Wow.
So I guess we know who's carrying the weight there.
Every one of those checks has paid off for me on that cruise. That's fantastic. And we should point out today that our podcast is sponsored by Simply Safe Home Security. Protect your home the smart way without the expensive long-term contracts using Simply Safe Home Security. Visit simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's spelled SIMPLISAFE.com/ricochet. Jim, we have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today as usual. Let's start with the good, and we didn't necessarily think it was great news at the time that this happened, but the fact that chickens are coming home to roost for Harry Reid is always a delicious thing. You may remember that at one point during the Obama administration, Republicans were doing a pretty effective job at filibustering controversial judicial nominations and certain appointments, and Harry Reid finally had enough. He went nuclear, did the nuclear option. Other than Supreme Court justices and legislation, you can't filibuster anymore on nominations to lower courts or any political appointments. And now that Democrats are pulling their hair out over a possible Jeff Sessions as attorney general, and who knows how many apoplectic fits they're going to have over the rest of these cabinet selections, it's kind of fun to watch Democrats do this because it's the only thing they can do. As long as the Republicans stay together, there's not going to be a lot of drama in these nominations.
I guess if she's getting one of our last way to go, Nevada, way to go before Harry Reid departs the scene, Greg. Although in this case, I guess we might actually need it, right? If they'd elected Sharon Angle, he wouldn't have been around and he wouldn't have been able to put in this rule into place so the Republicans could keep it and get pretty much all the nominations through. So way to go, really, genuinely. I think that the other thing is I'm finding – I don't understand the Democratic philosophy on the Trump appointments. Republicans, when the Louisiana Senate race is complete, are likely to have a 52-48 majority. Not a huge one. The question will be, how does Susan Collins feel on any one of these? How does Lisa Murkowski feel on any one of these? You know, under the right circumstances, they could manage to block a cabinet official. But all in all, most Senates are inclined to give the president the nominees he wants. And if you wanted to stop someone, you basically got to pick one, I would argue. The more you concentrate your fire on one particular nominee, the more pressure you can bring to bear, the harder you can make the confirmation hearing. But you can't say that all of them are bad. And I don't know about you, Greg. I mean, we were getting these little tiny pamphlet versions of the New York Times on the boat. They would print them out and come out with a couple hundred copies, and people would read them over breakfast. And I remember seeing one of the headlines was, with Flynn, Sessions, and Pompeo, Trump picks three hardline extremists or something like that. And the objections to these three guys are three really different issues, three really different ones. And also, I'd argue, much varying degrees of intensity. I've heard very few Democrats really argue that Mike Pompeo is not an appropriate choice to head up the Central Intelligence Agency. On Flynn, there's a question of the comments about Muslims and the ties to Russia, but I don't believe the National Security Advisor actually has to be approved by the Senate.
Right.
And on Sessions, this is one of their fellow members who in all likelihood is going to get at least 52 votes from the Republicans. And it's not unthinkable you could get a decent number of Democrats going along with them. Bringing up 30-year-old comments is not necessarily going to make a lot of people argue. Now, there's some other looming scandal in Sessions' past. I suppose it's possible. But the Democrats really seem to have this scattershot, they're all bad approach. And when you do that, if everybody is terrible, then nobody's terrible, right? Everyone just kind of tunes it out as the same old partisan mudslinging and anger and temper tantrums. And so I don't really understand the Democratic logic here. If they really wanted to stop one, I would wait until the entire cabinet is named. And if they're smart, they'll pick one and try to derail that nomination because experience kind of tells us that by and large, the president almost always gets the cabinet picks that he wants.
Exactly. And there usually is, I don't know about usually, but oftentimes there is a derailment. For Bush, it was Linda Chavez. For Obama, it was Tom Daschle at HHS due to some tax issues and so forth. And there were a couple others who could have gone down that
John Tower.
Yeah, John Tower in Bush 41 and so forth. And Clinton, I believe, his first attorney general nominee, didn't make it. So
Lanny Guinier, yes.
Yes. Yeah. Very good.
That kind of illegal nanny was a cutting edge.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, how times have changed. But it's very interesting how all these ists and phobe labels are going out there. I think basically the mainstream media trying to say that because they've concluded that Donald Trump is those things, that anybody he picks for these positions carries the same baggage. And doesn't exactly work that way.
It doesn't. I also point out that when the round of Trump appointees were named, we had MSNBC, and the anchor asked Andrea Mitchell, so with Sessions named and many objections, Andrea Mitchell, do you think there's any chance that Senator Sessions can win confirmation? and Andrea Mitchell, for all of the differences we may have or gripes we may have about her coverage every now and then, has a good head on her shoulders and can count. And she basically, I think he's a pretty safe bet. I think there's a pretty good chance of that. And it was really kind of fascinating that in the MSNBC anchor's mind, any Democratic objection to a nominee means that nominee is in trouble. And that's not how it works. And for that, we could honestly, genuinely, no sarcasm in our voices, thank Harry Reid.
That's true. That's true. One good thing. At least for this moment. All right. Jim, I know you're out of town, but there a couple days after the election, Trump went to Washington and met with President Obama. And I know this was a long time ago. It's like almost 2 weeks ago. Do you remember when President Obama said, the most important thing to me is an orderly transition to help you succeed as president? Yeah. Well, there's an expiration date on that promise, too, apparently, because this is the New York Times. In his remarks to Organizing for America activists, Mr. Obama urged them to stop moping and to ratchet up their opposition to Mr. Trump by Thanksgiving. He promised to join their cause soon after, telling them, quote, you're going to see me early next year, and we're going to be in a position where we can start cooking up all kinds of great stuff to do, unquote. He has echoed that message in private conversations, making it clear he may not completely pattern himself after George W. Bush, who almost never criticized his successor. One friend of Mr. Obama's who requested anonymity to discuss private discussions with the president said the election results seem to have made him more willing to remain part of the political debate. Quote, everyone he talks to walks away with this impression, the friend said. Jim, we know this president, despite his lofty rhetoric, is often pretty petty. I don't think it shocks us that he's not planning to go away, but it's really going to get old soon.
Matthew Broderick at the end of Ferris Bueller's Day Off come out after the credits and say, it's over. What are you still doing here? Go home. And rather revealingly, President Obama is scheduled to be the one of the few presidents to remain in Washington for a period of time. He said he wanted to do it to ensure his children's schooling did not get disrupted. And I can understand that placing the daughter's priorities first. But this is a separate decision. This isn't just a matter of location. This is a matter of traditionally presidents in retirement went off and got involved in charities and did kind of entered kind of an apolitical stage of their life. Maybe you could argue Nixon set a standard for being very active in the international stage and kind of winning his way back. But he had a pretty unique set of circumstances of wanting to rebuild his image in public life. Greg, it really feels like we've established two very clear precedents. When a Republican president leaves the presidency, he tends to get into this happy nonpartisan stage of life of not being an active critic of his whoever follows him, of retiring from politics and kind of letting the legacy stand. And then if you're a Democrat, you don't. If you're a Democrat, you stay front and center. And if you either set up a vast system of international bribery, like the Clintons. I'm sorry. I totally misread that word. It's a vice president. I remember Al Gore going out and really campaigning against Bush as if the 2000 election had not happened. And he went out and said, he played on our fears. And Al Gore was determined. He was going to fight the 2000 election for well afterwards. And it kind of feels like this you end up in a circumstance of not just a perpetual campaign of Republicans versus Democrats, but the presidential campaign itself doesn't end. Like the candidates who lost does not want to retire from the scene and let somebody else carry the torch. If I'm a Democrat, I'm not 100% sure I'm comfortable with this. Now, on the one hand, there may be a sense that the party is so lost and so leaderless and so devoid of natural figures to unify around that Obama has to play that role. But I also kind of wonder if the American people will kind of have a certain whether this will tax the patience of people if they have a president who just refuses to leave the scene and let somebody else take over. But then again, I guess that would be just one more Obama tax, wouldn't it, Greg?
It would. And of course, the media will eat up every second of it. So you'll never get the Obama fatigue message from them as they would if George W. Bush had done a similar thing back in 2009 and beyond. Jim, this is Thanksgiving week, which means Black Friday is on Friday. And that means it's Christmas shopping time if you haven't done so already. Now, some people in my family, they start doing this stuff back in like June. But me, I haven't even started yet. I haven't even thought about it yet. But if you're thinking about yourself, or you're thinking about somebody who needs something really practical, not some, you know, tie that they're never going to wear or something, this holiday season, check home security off your to-do list. Protect your home with my friends at Simply Safe Home Security. Now is the perfect time. Simply Safe is having its biggest holiday sale ever. Right now, you can take a whopping $200 off Simply Safe's special holiday security package. Now, this is an award-winning alarm system and has everything you need to protect your home. An arsenal of 17 security sensors to secure every door and window. There's a panic button, a blaring extra siren, and a wireless connection to authorities and police dispatch so your family, your home, and everything in it stay safe around the clock.
Now, Greg, you've ever seen an offer where they say $200 off, but they don't mention the original price. And you're thinking, wait a minute, if it's $200 off $1 million, that's really not that much of a discount. Well, usually this alarm system is $600. Now you can get it for just $400. This is the biggest deal that Simply Safe has ever offered. Plus, there is no long-term contract, no installation costs, and no hidden fees.
So what do you have to lose? Check it out now. Get your $200 off by going to simplysafe.com/ricochet right now. That's spelled SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. One more time, that's simplysafe.com/ricochet. That's a great deal, and you save the $200. And I believe $200 is about the going rate of a ticket for most shows on Broadway. Jim,
good segue.
Thank you. And for some shows, when they get really popular, it's a lot more than that. I think some people are paying like four figures for tickets to Hamilton, which did very well at the Tonys this year. But as you all know, if you've paid attention to the news over the past couple of days, Hamilton is in the news, not for the production, but for the message it offered to Vice President-elect Mike Pence, who went with some of his family members to the show on Friday night on Broadway. Pence, of course, very busy leading the transition. So a night off, a good thing. He was booed pretty roundly by the crowd as he came in. And then at the end of the production, as he was preparing to leave, because of course the Secret Service will want to get him and his entourage out of there before most people exit, the cast decided that it was important that he hear a message from them before he exit. This is from actor Brandon Victor Dixon, who plays Aaron Burr in the musical, and here's part of what he said.
You know, we had a guest in the audience this evening, and Vice President-elect Pence, I see you walking out, but I hope you will hear us just a few more moments. There's nothing to boo here, ladies and gentlemen. There's nothing to boo here. We're all here sharing a story of love. We have a message for you, sir. We hope that you will hear us out. Vice President-elect Pence, we welcome you, and we truly thank you for joining us here at Hamilton and American Musical. We really do. We, sir, we are the diverse America who are alarmed and anxious that your new administration will not protect us. Our planet, our children, our parents, or defend us and uphold our inalienable rights, sir. But we truly hope that this show has inspired you to uphold our American values and to work on behalf of all of us.
So they're alarmed and they're anxious that Trump and Pence won't protect children, parents, or our planet. They want to make sure that obviously all the inalienable rights are protected as well. Donald Trump, not about to let this go, tweeted three times about this, twice on Saturday. First, our wonderful future VP Mike Pence was harassed last night at the theater by the cast of Hamilton. Cameras blazing. This should not happen. Same day. The theater must always be a safe and special place. The cast of Hamilton was very rude last night to a very good man, Mike Pence. Apologize. And then yesterday, the cast and producers of Hamilton, which I hear is highly overrated, should immediately apologize to Mike Pence for their terrible behavior. Now, Pence himself was on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. He only had glowing reviews of the show itself. And then he was also much more modern in his tone about his reaction to it. Here's what he said to Chris Wallace.
You know, when we arrived, we heard a few boos and we heard some cheers, and I nudged my kids and reminded them that's what freedom sounds like. And but at the end, I did hear what was said from the stage, and I can tell you, I wasn't offended by what was said. I'll leave to others whether that was the appropriate venue to say it.
And here's what he had to say about the concerns.
I just want to reassure people that what President-elect Donald Trump said on election night, he absolutely meant from the bottom of his heart. He is preparing to be the president of all of the people of the United States of America.
Jim, that's the way you do it. That's what freedom sounds like. We're going to be leading from doing our best work for everyone in this country. Trump's tweets, the volcanic reaction from, you know, Jeanine Pirro to everybody else in the conservative blogosphere, at least in the right-leaning blogosphere, was way over the top. Trump's tweets didn't help. If somebody in a conservative performance had lectured Obama from the stage, I'm sure we've seen the exact same reaction from the left. Apparently, Mike Pence is the only adult in the room here.
I think that's a very good way of putting it, Greg. I suppose we should give a couple molecules of credit to the Hamilton actor who began by saying, please no booing, but then proceeded to address Pence from the stage. You'd like to think that a musical that clearly, you know, reflects everything that Lin-Manuel Miranda and everyone around him, their viewpoint of the world, their viewpoint of American history, what our society ought to be. I mean, literally at one point, Greg, one of the lyrics is immigrants, they get the job done. You'd think that would be able to stand by itself. You would think that your artwork would say, this is what I have to say to the world. And you wouldn't need a separate addendum. Oh, by the way, Mr. Pence, here's some specific policy proposals we have in light of the values of Hamilton and stuff. It did come across as kind of condescending, and I don't necessarily think appropriate. Because the other thing is that if you're, let's say you're a typical liberal progressive Hollywood actor or writer or producer or director, and you want to make a statement to the world. Well, if you want to change minds amongst conservatives, you think we're wrong, let's assume, hopefully you don't have too much of fear and loathing of us and thinking that our knuckles scrape the ground as we walk. And you want us to come to your show, right? You want us to come and see, and hopefully this will change our minds or stir our hearts or at the very least get us to look at something a little bit differently. If you call people out from the stage, they're not going to go to the theater. Right. If you create an audience, and this is the thing that you, if you want your work to be just preaching to the choir, if you want to create something and create a performance environment where people will only attend if they agree with you. I mean, you can still make money. There's still plenty of people. Hamilton is sold out, I believe, until the sun goes cold. you talk about the prices. I believe there's now a black market kidney market up in New York for people who are trading spare organs for tickets. But all in all, if you were a conservative going there, or if you're a conservative lawmaker at the very least, would you want to go there and be noticed and be called out? I understand the audience also booed Bibi Netanyahu when he attended. When did the theater turn into this place where, like, what, all of a sudden conservative lawmakers or conservative figures can't go to the theater and enjoy these things? If I'm Lin-Manuel Miranda, I don't want to discourage anybody from coming to see my show. I want to reach the biggest audience that I can, and I'll communicate my values and I'll tell my story, and hopefully that will change the minds, and you don't need this separate political lesson or something like that. And I think that the actor really kind of either crossed the line or went right up to the line, and I think you're right. The apoplectic reaction across the board seems kind of silly. We could be in for a very long 4 years, and longtime listeners know just how unsympathetic I was to Trump during the election. But things like this just naturally make you feel more sympathetic to them, because all Mike Pence wants to do is take his daughter and their cousins to the show, and all of a sudden he has to turn into this and a giant national controversy. So I would say, you know, if you're an artist, let your values showcase through your work, and let the let's see if you're, you know, if you can create an earworm that stays in their head and there's humming that song the entire time. who knows how they end up changing their values if they go into the Oval Office humming a particular tune.
Yes. And I would say keep your powder dry for the fights that actually matter coming up. Ultimately, I don't think this one's going to play that much into what the next 4 years looks like. Jim, I'm torn on what the best joke and reaction to this is. One is Hamilton should beware what happened the last time they got into a fight with a vice president, the real Hamilton.
Very good, yes.
Yeah. Or the left, colon, taking shots at Republicans in theaters since 1865.
Ooh, that's really, really bad. But I will salute you, Greg. I think the best line did come from my colleague, Kevin Williamson. So he says he really wished Pence would come up, wave to everyone and say to the cast of Hamilton, like you, I truly admire Hamilton. More than anything else, I have to salute him for the invention of the Electoral College. Everyone in the theater go, oh, yeah. Oh, he did do that. Yeah. That bastard.
Excellent.
They rewrite the film. They rewrite the whole play to make Hamilton the bad guy.
That's right.
Aaron Burr was just too late. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a new scene that's about to be added at the end. Jim, good to have you back. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And don't forget, head to simplysafe.com/ricochet. Get $200 off your home security system. SimpliSafe, SimpliSafe.com/ricochet. Join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.